Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for home theater geeks is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded June 27th, 2011. Episode 70, Computer Audiophilia. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies streamed to your PC, Mac, or TV instantly. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here with ultimateavmag.com and hometheater.com. This week's guest geek is Chris Conacher, the founder of computeraudiophile.com. Hey, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott, good to be here.
Thanks. Thanks so much for being here. Those who are tuned into the live video stream at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Chris, and I'll pass on as many as I can. So, Chris, I want to start with the basics. I have to admit that I am not all that well-versed in computer audiophilia, certainly not in terms of high-quality audio. Everybody listens to MP3s and all that stuff. But in terms of getting a high-quality audio experience out of your computer, I'd just like for you to run over the basics for us. What do we need to do this?
Sure. You know, I got asked this in an interview the other day, and I said, you know, to me, when I look at a new turntable, that is like rocket science to me. So,
whereas computers, audio, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, whew, easy thing. So, you know, the basics, something really important is to have an external DAC, digital to analog converter. Mm-hmm. The ones inside computers just don't cut it. It's a very noisy environment, and the analog outputs on computers just are not good. Like, for example, right now, I'm using a Wavelength Proton USB DAC.
Okay.
It's asynchronous. So, you know, you can use pretty much any computer you want. Obviously, you know, when you're using Windows, there's a lot of things going on, antivirus, Windows Defender, and a bunch of stuff going on that may compete for your audio output quality and stuff like that. So, but on the most basic level, a good external DAC, whether it's USB or optical toss link, that gets you going.
Now, you told me offline that you'd prefer to use USB to toss link or HDMI. Why is that?
Yeah. You know, USB, the latest USB DACs have what's called asynchronous USB transfer mode.
And that is can you give us a little bit of explanation of what that means?
Yeah, definitely. When it's implemented properly, that can be a real advantage. The two USB DACs are generally asynchronous or adaptive. And the difference between the two is asynchronous controls all the clocking, and it controls the data rate flow from the computer. So it's saying, you know, send me more information, or hold on, don't send me that much. So there's no underruns or overflows, versus adaptive, where the name kind of sends it all. It has to adapt to the computer. So the computer is sending information or sending a clock signal, and the clock signal isn't exactly what it needs. So it uses a synthesizer to generate its own clock. Mm. So, you know, USB DACs using asynchronous aren't always better than adaptive. Like I just reviewed a new Belcanto DAC 1.5, that's adaptive and it sounded very, very good. So it all depends on the implementation done, you know, the skill of the engineer developing it. But asynchronous is a really great thing via USB.
Mm-hmm. DE Blue Hen in the chat room asks, does USB 3 versus 2 make a difference?
As far as I know, it does not. There's nothing new in terms of audio, the audio spec in USB 3. And in terms of bandwidth, USB 2.0 has plenty of bandwidth for multi-channel at 24/192 or DSD at really high band rates. So as far as I know, USB 3 doesn't really matter.
So DSD is the audio format, or the digital audio format, for SACD. And is that something you can actually get and put in your computer and stream out? I kind of thought that was a little more restricted.
Yeah, it's interesting because the physical SACDs, you know, you can't really rip them in any legal form.
But yeah.
Labels are offering DSD downloads, like Blue Coast Records. Cookie Marenko, she records in DSD with a Sonoma system, so it's pure DSD, and she offers those as downloads through her online store. And more DACs now are supporting DSD playback through USB. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Virgil in the chat room asks, would the Creative Lab Sound Blaster X-Fi Elite Pro sound card give you good sound?
It depends. I'm not familiar with that exact one. If it gives you digital output, that's a step in the right direction. I usually shy away from analog outputs from computers. They're just substandard compared to an external DAC.
Is part of the problem, I've understood that part of the problem might be that if the DAC is inside the computer, that's a very electromagnetically noisy environment. Is that part of the problem, why you'd want to have a DAC outside the computer?
Yeah, that's one critical problem. Another is, you know, computers are made to do a million things, and how much engineering and cost they put into, say, an internal DAC and the internal analog outputs. And then there's the noisy switching power supply.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, when you look at an outboard DAC, a lot of them have, you know, big linear power supplies, and the analog output stages are designed very, very well. So, you know, there's a big difference. And I think nearly everybody who's tried it, the analog out versus using an external DAC, can notice a difference.
Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about file formats and compression yet. I'm assuming that you are totally supportive of uncompressed files, or at least losslessly compressed files. Give us your take on formats and compression and so on.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I admit to purchasing iTunes downloads, AAC, extremely lossy, you know, like the new Britney Spears or something. You know, hey, it's cool music, it's entertaining, I'll download it. But then I always go buy the CD. And so file formats, you know, the totally uncompressed PCM formats like AIFF and WAV, great stuff. I really don't see a need to use any compression just because it's like, you know, disk space is fairly cheap. Why? But I really like the FLAC format for a couple reasons. The metadata support in FLAC is fabulous. You know, it's a great standard, and I can go from a FLAC format to virtually any other format I want. So what
now,
I
FLAC,
have is...
FLAC is lossless compression, right?
Yes, free lossless audio codec compression. So what I have is what I call like my gold copy. I rip all my stuff to several different formats. Obviously, you know, it's a little over the top, but I have a FLAC copy of everything. So in the future, I can go from FLAC to anything I want. You know, Apple Lossless is another compressed lossless format. It says so in the name. But since it's not really an open standard, you're not guaranteed, you know, I mean, there's no guarantees with anything, but you're not really guaranteed that, you know, Apple's isn't changing anything behind the scenes, or that your conversion app is going to be able to convert it as easy as FLAC. So, you know, I really like FLAC. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Now, on the radio show, on Leo Laporte's radio show this weekend, we were talking a little bit about lossy compression, MP3, and at what point, at what bit rate, does MP3 become audibly indistinguishable from the original CD, say? Do you have an opinion on that?
You know, when you think about MP3, I believe the highest bit rate is like 320K, and
something
to
like
me,
that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely audible compared to a Redbook CD.
You can hear the difference between that and a Redbook, huh?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Get a piece of music that you're familiar with on a, you know, halfway decent system, and it's pretty audible. What I like to do is, you know, I'll listen to something for a while, say a couple hours, and then I'll put in something different. That way, I know exactly what it's supposed to sound like, and when the new thing comes in, I should be able to hear a difference right away. If I don't, then there isn't a difference.
Yeah, right. Well, and it also that's also a perceptual thing, and some people are going to hear it and some people aren't. And I contend that those who are quote-unquote trained listeners might be more readily sensitive to and hear the differences between lossy and lossless compression than those who don't have training to as to what to listen for example.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I've really learned a lot from is people in the professional music industry. If you listen to anything with those people, they'll be like, oh, listen to the compressor on that voice, or, you know, mm-hmm. oh, this MP3 yeah. really affects the sibilance. Mm-hmm. And to an audiophile, it's like, holy cow.
Well, you mentioned earlier ripping, and you mm-hmm. rip your CDs and so on. And I wanted to definitely touch on that subject as well. Certainly, ripping CDs is relatively easy. DVD audio, I suppose, is not that bad. SACD is not so easy.
Yeah, correct. You know, CDs, that's been going on forever, fairly easy. My favorite ripping application for CDs is DB PowerAmp. To me, that's just unbeatable. It's easy. The user interface is great. It's got tons of options. I output to two different NAS devices at the same time. And sure, that's a little over the top for most users, but, you know, why not?
Hey, you're a geek.
Exactly. But DVD audio, there's an application that I use and a lot of people on my site use called, I believe it's like DVD Audio Extractor. You pay for it. It's not the free one. It really works well. It's just a GUI interface, next, finish, and you have it. You can also rip the Classic Records HDAD discs, which are really just DVD audio discs. But it's a great way to get high-res content that's not offered for download.
Right. I got a couple more.
SACD, totally.
Can't do it.
You can play it back and try and split the audio off the video or from an HDMI cable, go through an Altona box, but it gets pretty geeky.
just to finish that thought, what is the Altona box?
Sure, the Altona is a splitter.
HDMI splitter, I see.
Yeah, you'll strip the audio off and then, you know, go out and capture that.
Yeah, that does sound pretty geeky.
Yeah.
got a couple questions in the chat room here. TechNow15 asks, does compression downgrade the file? And I was going to ask you this. Certainly, lossy compression downgrades the audio experience, but is there a difference between different lossless compression algorithms like FLAC versus Apple lossless or WMA lossless?
You know, I don't think so. Because, I mean, the geek side, people will know, like, you can take a lossless file, convert it to uncompressed back and forth all day and do an MD5 hash check, and it comes out the exact same file every time. Mm. So as long as you're getting that to be... it's going to take a lot of convincing for me to believe that those are different. granted, how the application plays those back may be different.
That's a good point.
You know, iTunes certainly handles Apple lossless. It doesn't handle FLAC, but there's, you know, applications that will do both. And, you know, they all should handle both great and, you know, uncompress them to PCM, send it out to your DAC and have no problem. But if there isn't a difference, that's where it would be, I think.
Hmm. What are the applications that will do both Apple lossless and FLAC?
You know, on a Mac, I mean, on PC, everything pretty much does FLAC. My favorite app on a PC is J River Media Center, and there's a plugin that you can do so it'll support Apple lossless. But on a Mac, I've been using apps like Amara, Pure Music, Fidelia, Audirvana, and stuff like that, and Decibel. Mm-hmm. So those will play both. So in a way you can do iTunes with FLAC using a program called Fluke, but to me that's just
I love these names.
Yeah, it's anti the user experience for me, so I don't do it.
Ah. Okay. let's see. I knew I had another here, Ricard asks, what hardware do you recommend to rip DAT audio tapes? There you go.
Ooh, that one is out of my league. I don't, never ripped any DAT audio tapes.
I would think that you could. Is there a, well, I know that a DAT tape deck has digital outs.
Yeah, if it's got digital out, I mean,
you should just be able to
use any sort of digital in and capture that. But yeah, I've never done it.
Right. I still have a DAT. I still have a DAT machine in my recording studio, which I used to master on.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question from Ronnie: OGG or MP3 for the web?
MP3.
Yeah, just because it's more common.
Exactly. I mean, it's everywhere, and people understand what that means.
Yeah.
You know?
What's the deal with OGG?
You know, OGG. Somebody just asked me that question at a seminar, and before I could answer, another person from the audience shouted out, "Hey, it's just another version of lossy encoding." So, I mean, MP3 to me is, as much as I hate to say it, is the one I would go with.
Right. there was. I'd like to turn it for a second to hardware, because when I was talking with someone at the THE audiophile show down here in L.A. And I know it was MBL, German makers of really high-end speakers and amplifiers and stuff. And they were using, interestingly, as their source device for demonstrating their hundreds of thousands of dollars system, a Linux box called the Sonor.
Yeah.
From Simple Design.
Yes. The guys at Simple Design are wonderful. Very, very cool. And so what it is, it's a Linux computer that is running, the name escapes me right now, the software on top of it, VortexBox.
VortexBox is the name of the software, right?
Yes. So what I call these servers, they're like toasters to me. If I put bread in a toaster and I push the button down, it toasts. It's that simple.
Right.
So these servers, I put my CD in, it rips, and then I hit play and it plays. I mean, it's that simple. So
right. With
an iPhone or iPad interface, those will output digital to MBL is either going to their USB DAC or maybe an AES interface. But those servers are really, really cool, and it's weird that a Linux server may be the choice for people that know nothing about computers. That sounds like very weird, but
yeah, because Linux is kind of geeky.
Exactly, the Linux servers, like from Simple Design, and they're absolutely simple to use. You know, you plop them in. If you can connect the physical connections, and use an iPhone, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
And the sound too is great. They output bit perfect at all relevant sample rates. So their boxes are great. And any Ultra geeks in the chat room, they can download VortexBox and set it up themselves. So it's pretty cool.
Doesn't have to be on their hardware.
No. VortexBox is it's a great project. So, but I know Simple Design has done some. They've worked really hard on some customizations and made their stuff pretty cool. They made a customization for me to do external clocking with a Lynx card by one click. So it gets as far as you want to take it. It's pretty cool.
Now I'm getting some comments in the chat room about preferring LPs. And we're always going to have those folks. And it brings up actually an interesting question that I asked on my website this week. Every week I put up a poll question and I ask people their opinion about stuff. And this week, the question is, can digital audio ever be indistinguishable from analog?
Yes.
If you get a high enough resolution and high enough sample rate, do you think so?
Well, my answer is tongue-in-cheek, but if I take a high-res digital file and apply some sort of plug-in to add in the pops and ticks,
mm-hmm.
then it will sound exactly like analog. But interestingly, at the Newport show, the show that you were at, I was down there too.
Sure.
I was talking to famous recording engineer Bill Schnee, who's won Grammys with Steely Dan, and he's his new Bravura Records project has ultra high resolution stuff. But I was asking him, you know, people are playing reel-to-reel tape or vinyl.
I heard some reel-to-reel tape at the show.
Yeah, and, you know, Bill will say, well, I recorded that, or I know exactly what that's supposed to sound like, and the tape and vinyl absolutely don't come close to what digital can sound like, or, you know, in terms of realness and what it's supposed to sound like. So, you know, coming from somebody in the pro side instead of the audiophile side, to me, that kind of meant a lot in terms of he knows what it should sound like way more than I do.
Sure.
So to me, digital really is where it's at in terms of the best sound quality.
Yeah. So Cal Ray Jr. In the chat room says, no, it can't because it has no clicks and pops.
Yeah. And I mean, keep in mind, I still love vinyl, you know, reel to reel. All that stuff's great. But in terms of the ultimate sound quality, it's digital.
Yeah. Dad Edwards in the chat room asks, whatever happened to MP3 Pro?
MP3 Pro, was that the lossless version? Or was that like MP3 HD? Or
I honestly don't know. Okay. I was hoping you would.
Well, at the last AES convention in San Francisco, there was somebody there from Fraunhofer, and I asked, why do we need another lossless format? Like an MP3 lossless.
Right.
And I don't remember the answer, but it it was unmemorable, I'll say.
Yeah, obviously, yes. Captain Kipper in the chat room says, yeah, you just apply the tape hiss plug-in.
Well, you know, the Sound on Sound magazine a couple months ago had a great article about digital audio workstations and making them sound like an old Studer tape machine. It was quite cool.
Common Sens in the chat room says, I've played with orchestras for 20 years in hundreds of concerts, and that statement just is not true. No digital sound file has come close to reproducing the sound quality of string instruments. Now, what I didn't ask, although I have asked in other ways in the past, is can recorded sound, I have asked this question actually, can recorded sound be indistinguishable from live performance?
Never. And that, absolutely never. Not. No. Nope.
I agree. That's a different. That is a different question, but I agree. It cannot, because you've got some finite number of speakers, two in the case of stereo audiophiles, or 5 or 7.1 in the case of a surround sound system, and the sound is all coming from there. Whereas if you're in an orchestra, you're listening to an orchestra, you've got sound sources coming from 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 different locations.
Yeah.
And they're all mixing in a big, big room, not your living room. So it is going to definitely be a very different experience.
Yeah, it's totally different. I guess, you know, my goal as an audiophile is to reproduce what the artist gives me. And so if I buy a CD, I want to faithfully reproduce that CD. I can't say I'm going to try and make it sound live or whatever. I mean, you just can't do that. The biggest instrument in your room is the room.
Right.
So, you know, there's just way too much going on to really do that. But getting back to the person in the forum saying, you know, he hasn't heard digital come close, or, you know, whatever the words was. I don't want to put words in his mouth.
Sure.
I would really recommend spending time with some other digital playback. I don't know what he's heard it on. For example, you know, download something from Bravura Records. They have some Christmas singles, I believe, that they gave away. But Bill Schnee's recording live to 2-track at 24192. His record label saying is kind of real talent in real time. So it's really good stuff. It's the best digital I've ever heard. But then again, the playback system should be very good as well.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody in the chat room is asking, New Kid is asking, what's that red thing on the wall behind you? Looks kind of like a DNA image.
He's exactly right. It's my DNA.
No, it's
and I'm
future.
Using it to absorb the first reflection from my speakers.
Okay, so it's an acoustic treatment.
I'm using it as one. It's canvas, so it's a little better than the wall, you know, reflecting off. But yeah, it's from, I think, like DNA 11 or something like that is where I got it done. You swab your cheek and send it in. And
well, that really is your DNA?
That's really my DNA, yeah.
Oh my God, that's great!
Yeah, I thought, you know, where can I get wall artwork that nobody else has?
Well, no, nobody else has that artwork. That's for damn sure.
Exactly.
Wow, that is so cool.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Well, listen, before we continue, I'd like to just take a moment, if you don't mind, to thank our sponsor for this episode of Home Theater Geeks, which is Netflix. Netflix delivers movies directly to your home, and it saves you time, money, and hassle, movies and TV shows. You can watch thousands of TV episodes and movies streamed directly to your PC or Mac, or you can stream it directly to your TV if it has a Netflix app, which virtually all of them do. Or a Blu-ray player or your gaming device like an Xbox 360, a PS3, Nintendo Wii. You can watch as many movies as you want, any time you want, and there are never any late fees or due dates. Be sure to sign up for our free trial at netflix.com/twit. That's going to be a very good deal for you, and I sure hope you take advantage of it. And we thank Netflix for their support of Twit. So getting back with Chris Conacher here, we're in a lively discussion about computer audiophilia. And
I just put a link to DNA11.com
excellent.
In the chat room.
In the chat room. Excellent. There you go. Let's see where you are. Well, okay. At least it's there. Somebody can you can grab it if you want. That is so cool. I'm going to have to do that myself.
It's cool, for
my own home theater here. We were talking a little bit there. You were mentioning something about an online source. I can't remember which one it was.
For music?
Yeah.
Oh, well, Bravura Records.
Bravura Records, that was it. And I wanted to touch upon online sources in general. That's one. And I'm talking about online sources for high-resolution digital, not, you know, like iTunes, which is perfectly fine. But
I use iTunes. But yeah. Not if I have a choice, I don't. You've had Mark Waldrip on from iTrax. That's certainly a really good source.
By the way, is another philosophy like Bravura, which is, you know, live. He basically records ensembles playing live in a room, in an auditorium, actually, mm-hmm. and then mixes that down later. He doesn't do it live to two-track. He's not doing the mixing as he goes. Is that what Bravura is doing?
Bravura is doing it as they go. It's you know, Bill Schnee was took part in the old Sheffield Labs direct to disc stuff. So he's doing it live as he goes. It's, you know, he's got some incredibly talented musicians he's working with. So it's pretty cool stuff. But
and an incredibly talented mixing engineer as well, because you don't get a second chance at that.
No, he is incredibly talented.
Okay, all right.
And if you're at the show in Newport, the TAD loudspeaker room uses his material.
Unfortunately, I didn't make it to the TAD room.
So if you're going to Rocky Mountain Audio Fest or anyone else's, stop by TAD. They'll get to hear his stuff. Mm-hmm. iTrax is good. And Mark, you know, it's digital it's analog, obviously, coming off the instruments, but it's captured digital and output digital, everything. So yep. iTrax is good. And then, you know, HDTracks.com is really getting the big players. They don't come any bigger than the Rolling Stones or Eric Clapton, and they have those guys in high resolution. So that's quite cool, and it's come a long way from a few years ago when it was you can download Scottish Nose Whistle at 24/192 or Seals Barking or Sticks Breaking, you know.
Right, right. So now that HDTracks has quite a good library, you're saying.
It's growing, getting better constantly. It's quite cool.
What other sources? I know of one called 2L in Norway.
Yes.
But they basically only do Norwegian music, as far as I know.
Yeah. I've tried a couple of the 2L releases. It's not my favorite music. So it's, you know, it sounds great, but it's really tough to get into. But yeah, 2L does it. Blue Coast Records, Cookie Marenko's label, is offering high res. And one interesting thing, Jack Johnson, his debut album was just remastered, and they offered it in 16-bit 48K, so not, you know, true high res, but mm-hmm. they did offer that as a download from his site, which was, that's cool.
Yeah. You mentioned also MOG.
Ah, yes, MOG, my favorite online music service, yes.
Ah, tell us about that.
To me, there's no reason to purchase anything off iTunes anymore if you use MOG. So for, I think it's about $10 a month, you can listen to nearly any kind of music, anything you can think of, all the new releases. On Tuesday, you get an email saying, you know, here's what's out, new Lady Gaga, whatever you're into, is out there. And there's an iPhone app. And what's really cool about the iPhone app is if you're on Wi-Fi, you can stream at 320K MP3, or you can download to your iPhone at 320K MP3. So before I go on an airplane, I just go out and grab a bunch of albums that I've never heard, download them, and while I'm on the plane, think about, hey, do I need to buy these? And it's really, really cool. So you can either buy it from iTunes at a lesser quality, or you can just listen to anything you want from Moog. So I have no financial interest in Moog. I just think it's the coolest thing. I love it.
Now, is there any lossless content available from iTunes? Is that a place where you can get?
No.
Lossless? No.
Well, we take that back. If you you could have this podcast available lossless.
Yes, but, it's true.
Yes, but in terms of record labels, major labels, anything, no, they're not doing it.
It's all compressed. What about the iPhone and iPod and iPad, for that matter? Do you put many things on there that are not compressed or losslessly compressed, or is that practical?
Yeah, possible. It gets tough. The only thing that's lossy that I have is podcasts. You know, Leo's podcast, your podcast, all the cool ones. But in terms of music, I do it all lossless. I have the 160 gig iPod Classic, so I fill that up. And, you know, my iPhone, it's got what, 5 albums or something in AIFF or something ridiculous like that. And then I'll connect it to an external headphone amplifier just because the analog out of an iPhone leaves much to be desired. Or there's a new thing out now that's portable. I know the original name was called, like, from Cypher Labs, that'll take the digital out of your iPhone or iPod and then go into a headphone amp or DAC, and it's about the size of the iPhone. So it's quite cool. I know, you know, like, Wadia had the iPod dock that takes the digital out. Peachtree Audio's got, you know, integrated that take the digital out. But this was a true portable solution for digital out. It's quite cool.
Excellent. Number of people in the chat room are mentioning another service called Groove Shark. Do you know that one?
Ooh, heard of it, but never used it.
Well, there's TechNow 15 says try it out.
Excellent.
A couple other people are saying, yeah, man. So so that would be Dumb Bunny in the chat room asks about Lynn Audio. They also have a high res.
Oh yeah, they certainly
music
do.
Service.
Yes, forgot to mention. I've got some cool stuff from Lynn.
That's LINN, by the way.
Yes, yes.
Again, it's interesting that the several companies that make high-end, high-quality audio equipment also distribute music. B&W is another example.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's most of these people are music aficionados, music lovers, and at the same time, they realize without producing some of this, people aren't going to have that much good-sounding stuff to play back on their high-end system. I mean, it's a sorry state, you know?
Yeah.
But Name Audio also does it too, I believe.
NAIM.
Yep, yep. I saw Reverb Mike talks about iCloud and iCloud Match, supposed to do lossless.
Mm-hmm.
So far, the only reference I can find to iCloud supporting lossless was an article on Ars Technica. But I don't believe iTunes or iCloud Match will do it. Mm-hmm. iCloud Match will say, if you have it on your, you know, computer, we have it on the Apple server farm in North Carolina. Sure, let's imagine you can have the 256 AAC lossy version. If they're going to support uploads of lossless, what users would have to do is trick iCloud into not recognizing their music and then upload it. But I think lossless support remains to be seen for iCloud.
What about other cloud-based services? This is another question I wanted to get into with you. We have iCloud, we have Google Music Beta, we have Amazon Cloud Drive.
Yeah.
What do you think about that as opposed to storing locally?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a fan of them. I mean, I'm all for the new technology, everything like that. But what those services are doing is charging you to listen to music you already own and you've already paid for. Mm. So, you know, Google Music, right in their spec says that they support FLAC, but there's a little asterisk that says okay, we'll convert it to high-quality MP3 on the upload.
What?
So, yes.
Full Wait support a second. For Slack.
So, you know, again, it's like they support lossy compression. So does Amazon. And if you want lossy compression, you might as well just use Mog. Listen to anything you want anytime instead of paying to listen to what you already purchased. Mm. So, yeah, Amazon's cloud and Google Cloud, hopefully they get better.
Hopefully.
Yeah, you know, hopefully
Echo,
there's improvement.
Echo is mentioning also Best Buy has a cloud service. I didn't know that.
Oh, I think I saw something about that, but that's about it.
Sullivan, this is obviously some strange new meaning of the word support. You know?
Well,
okay.
Yeah, that it's interesting because people familiar with Sonos, the wireless music distribution system,
right.
they're now claiming support for AirPlay. And if you read the fine print, if you put an AirPort Express onto the back of their unit, it supports AirPlay. So, I mean, my car audio system supports AirPlay, I think, too, if you do that way.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right, okay. I had a question, actually a reader question, or it might have been a listener question. I can't tell because I just get these questions into my email about using a pre-pro, like the Marantz AV7005, which is the newest sort of high-end, semi-high-end, but semi-reasonably priced, actually, pre-pro, using them with music servers. So what's your experience with that?
Yeah, I've actually used that unit. I had it in here. And, you know, for people that can't set up the dedicated two-channel system, it works. It's fully functioning, can work great. Mm-hmm. The sound quality compared to, you know, separates, I don't think is there. But, you know, for the price, it's a great unit. What I found kind of, you know, disheartening was you have to, like, purchase the unit, and it says AirPlay support, but then once you get it, it's like, oh, it's an extra $50. Go online and go through the menu, download it. So you upgrade it to AirPlay for $50, and then the AirPlay support doesn't work that well. There's a lot of dropouts. I found that adding an AirPort Express to the digital out from an AirPort Express toss link into the back of the AV7005 mm-hmm. was much better with AirPlay support than the built-in AirPlay.
Huh.
So. And I think a lot of people are finding the same thing. Built-in AirPlay, I mean, sure, it's in prime time right now, but a lot of people are saying it's not ready for prime time. Mm. And there's many manufacturers holding back on coming out with it.
Interesting.
Yeah, so but that unit supports universal plug-and-play, UPnP. So, mm-hmm. you know, I was able to use J River Media Center on my Windows machine, and it shows up on the left-hand side. I can select the processor and send audio right to it. So, I mean, It works very well.
Yeah, okay. So let's see. I just saw a question here in the chat room, and it just disappeared. Where was it? Web9531 asks, can you talk about streaming audio and sound quality?
Okay. There's a big difference. You know, streaming audio, most people are thinking about streaming it from the internet. The others is streaming it, you know, within your house.
Around the house, yeah,
and around the house.
We've already talked about down, you know, streaming it. Well, actually, we haven't yet. So let's talk about both those things because we were talking about downloading stuff.
Yep.
I guess streaming would be part of the iCloud service. Would be not
actually,
iCloud, but cloud service.
It's weird, but iCloud doesn't support streaming.
What?
iCloud supports synchronization.
What's the difference?
So if I buy something on my iPhone, it'll also download to my laptop. So I'll have synchronized content. I can't go out on my iPhone and stream music from the cloud. It doesn't support it. And they were very careful not to mention streaming at the developer's conference.
Interesting.
But, you know, streaming from the internet, the quality is always suspect, but it's really, really fun. You can get some great stuff. In terms of finding new content, there's nothing beats it. You know, I stream Mog to my system back here all the time. It's great to find new stuff. But streaming around the house can be far better, you know, than streaming lossy. Like the Squeezebox Touch, I think, is the latest one. It's been out for a while. But that'll stream high-res content, 88.2, 96K. The interface, it's all right. Sound quality-wise, though, I haven't run into a wireless system that is truly high-end. I mean, I just haven't.
So, what about wired? What if you have a wired connection, Ethernet connection?
I think it's the same thing, really. Well, not the same thing. But say the Squeezebox, whether it's, you know, wired onto my gigabit LAN or doing wireless, they're still lacking because the Squeezebox, for example, the digital output isn't as good as, you know, a true high-end component that's designed to get really low jitter spec. The Squeezebox is a convenient device, and it's priced conveniently.
Mm-hmm.
I had a Lin Magic DSi here. That's a UPnP player. You know, it streams via wired Ethernet. And when I compared that to the SPDIF input, I found SPDIF sounded better. So,
whoa,
yeah, you know, it's and it could be me. I'm used to SPDIF. Maybe I just like the sound of that. You know, and better is a relative term. So, you know, it's tough to say. But wireless, I use it. I like it. But audiophile quality, I just haven't heard it.
Right. Simba in the chat room asks, how does Squeezebox audio quality compare with iTunes AirPlay?
Ooh, I haven't compared the two. I really should. I mean, I have them all here, but I should really set them up and compare it. It's probably, I would say it's probably similar, but Squeezebox supports high-res, AirPlay doesn't.
Ah, interesting. what was I going to ask? Caffeine-free Dave in the chat room asks, are those headphones Grado RSs?
Grado RS1s, yes.
One I?
No, these are original RS1s. Got them in like 2005, and they're an awesome headphone for rock and roll music. Love them.
That's great. We had Tyle Hertzens on last week talking about headphones. Mm. He thought Grados were fine, but he had moved on, I think, to something else.
Yeah,
but
he's not a fan of them. I like them, and I can't justify spending, you know, $1,500 or whatever the Sennheiser HD800s are, or even more. You know, the headphones that are just crazy good are the Stax.
Oh, yeah.
Stats.
Oh, man. I reviewed the Stax SR007s. And with the headphone amp that comes with them, that's like $4,000.
Yes.
And man, they sounded good. I mean, I listened to them, and I unfortunately put on my Sony Studio monitor headphones, and they sounded like crap.
Yeah, those Electrostats are such a seductive sound.
Oh,
those
it's really amazing. Wonderful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We got somebody in the chat room here asking about, what was it? Oh, here it is. Recommendation for a under $250 USB DAC.
Oh, boy. There's probably so many of them out there that don't come to mind. I don't know that I've reviewed one for under $200 or so.
What price point are you typically living at?
You know, everything from like $500 on up. I had, you know, a DCS unit in here that was, gosh, altogether is probably like $30,000.
Right. DCS is extremely expensive.
Yeah, very good stuff. But, you know, Petrie Audio has the new Dacket, it's called, out, and I think that's going to be right around $400 or $500.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm guessing will be a good unit based on their history and their other products.
Mm-hmm.
Arcam has a DAC that's fairly inexpensive. There's a lot of them out there. They don't come to the top of my head at the moment because there is so many.
Right.
And don't, you know, if there's one thing I can say about when you purchase a USB DAC, do not go on specs. You know, if it's asynchronous or adaptive, do not make a decision based on that. You can be fooled every time.
Well, as you pointed out earlier in the show, you generally prefer asynchronous, but you found recently an adaptive one that sounded great.
Yeah, Belcanto, USB DAC 1.5. Adaptive, they've done great, you know, if they're reclocking jitter on the inside or whatever. It's, you know, it's got a great analog output. They've done really well, you know, and there's several ways to implement adaptive and asynchronous. Some asynchronous requires that you install drivers on a Mac. Some require that you don't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to do things.
To skin the cat.
Yes, yes. I hate to say that in case my cat's lurking around.
Yeah, right, exactly. Data UK in the chat room asks, do you use a PC media server for all your music, or do you use USB only with a Mac laptop?
I use everything under the sun. I have a couple Mac Pros, one old G5, a new Intel-based one. I have a couple Linux servers, Windows. I mean, you name it.
Gotcha. Ronnie in the chat room mentions the name ProSonus, which I know from the Pro Audio side of things. Have you ever done anything with any of their products? I didn't even know they made it.
No.
USB DAC.
No.
Interesting. I think we covered this a little earlier. Winton165 in the chat room says, is using a USB DAC better than running a digital out directly to the receiver?
It depends. So if you say it, if I go digital out straight from my MacBook into a receiver, that's likely got to be Toslink. So you got to, and the mini Toslink cable, the regular Toslink. And then it really depends on how good the DAC inside your receiver is.
Good point.
Toslink interface is traditionally high in jitter, lower in quality. That doesn't mean always, but traditionally. Mm-hmm. Versus a USB DAC, like this Wavelength Proton I have here. It's $900, and that's asynchronous. It's going to output analog, very, very good quality. So it's hard to make a generalized statement. But the easiest thing to do, I tell people, is go pick up a Toslink to mini Toslink cable, connect it to your computer and then your receiver, and see what happens. If you like the sound, great. You don't have to move on, and you can get those cables for between $3 and $3,000. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
We'll save on
that. I was going to ask you about Toslink. That's what it was. How high a resolution can Toslink carry?
I have got it to carry 24/192 bit perfect, but
two channel.
Yes, two channel.
I mean, you're only going to get at 192 kilohertz. You're only going to get two channel. You can't get that in multi-channel, I think.
I don't believe so. And I also believe that 192 is either borderline or outside the spec of.
But you pushed it hard enough.
Yes, I did. And, all the Macs cap out at 2496 via the Toslink output. And there's probably good reason for that. Although, if you install Windows on a Mac, that's how I got it to output 24192. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get geeky just to test, specs, go for it.
Right. We want to. I'd love to just quickly define jitter. You've used that term several times, and I want to make sure everybody understands it.
Okay, jitter is one of the most incredibly difficult things in audio. And if you ask five engineers to define jitter or talk about jitter, you'll get at least 10 different answers. So to go deep into it is way outside my knowledge base. Overall,
but just basically,
it's just like mistimings in the data is really what it is. So if it's supposed to be, in high-end stuff, it gets down to like picoseconds of jitter, some stuff's nanoseconds, but just think of it as mistimings. And when talking digital audio, timing and clocking is absolutely critical for sound quality.
Sullivan in the chat room says, jitter is meaningless once the bits are reclocked, and they're always reclocked.
Well, that is a common theory, but I've often, to make myself more knowledgeable, I've often asked engineers, like, say, Keith Johnson, who, he's won Grammy, he's the AES fellow from Reference Recordings, about, is that the case? If it's reclocked, does jitter matter? And the answer is always everything matters. There's only so much you can do when you reclock to get rid of everything. There's a DAC, say, like by Playback Designs, their famous thing was feed us any signal and we can make it sound identical or good. Yet there was always a caveat, don't feed us USB. So, I'm certainly no expert on jitter or reclocking, but I know I do ask the people that know, and they say every time that if that was the panacea, everybody would be doing it and all DACs would sound very close to the same.
And they don't.
They do not. Absolutely not.
Yeah. I had a question here. Oh, Web777 wants me to ask you about the Olive 03HD music server. Have you had any experience with that one?
I haven't had experience with the 03, but I do have the 06HD coming in for review. Mm-hmm. I haven't had real hands-on with Olive stuff yet. It looks like good products based on specs, but we all know, you know, what that
give you. You just told us not to shop on specs, right?
Exactly. So don't do anything on specs. The 06HD is coming in soon, and I'm excited to get that. It's got digital out and analog out. So looks to be a very good product, and they've been around for a while.
Yeah, they have. They sure have. What about multi-channel music? As an audiophile, you're probably mostly focused on two-channel.
Mm-hmm.
Are you interested at all in multi-channel music?
Very interested in multi-channel, but, you know, as an audiophile, it gets over-the-top expensive and inconvenient because, of course, we always have to have the five equal speakers and five equal, you know, mono blocks, and it just gets over-the-top. Mm-hmm. I know Mark Waldrop does from iTracks releases multi-channel high-res recordings and stuff like that. And, you know, Reference Recordings just released, well, they won a Grammy for one of their multi-channel SACDs.
Yeah.
And Keith Johnson from Reference said, you know, when you get multi-channel right, there's really nothing in the world like it. And it's so real that it's scary. So
I have to say, I love listening to Mark Waldrop's multi-channel recordings. I mean, he really does a great job. I myself prefer, he offers you two perspectives. One mm-hmm. is as if you're sitting in the audience, and so the surround channels are mostly ambience. Mm-hmm. And the other is called the stage perspective, in which sounds like you're sitting in the middle of the band. And being a musician myself, I prefer the stage perspective, but I think I'm in the minority there.
Yeah, you know, when I had that Marantz AV7005, I downloaded a few of Mark's multi-channel, and I just didn't have good luck with it streaming from a computer, multi-channel via UPnP and stuff like that. I really tried a whole bunch of stuff and didn't get it to work the way I wanted it to. So,
well, that was my next question was, you know, streaming multi-channel obviously is more difficult.
Yeah, it's you know, the players, they'll say, oh, yeah, we support multi-channel playback, but then it's, you know, finding the hardware that's going to do it. And the Marantz had some serious limitations on what it would accept over two-channel and, you know, stuff like that. So playback of multi-channel with a computer really could be a lot easier.
Yeah, understood. One last question from the chat room. Winton165 asks, how do you compare Toslink Optical with Coax Digital?
Oh, yeah, sure. Coax Digital, it kind of brings up something else, too. Toslink is going to give you the optical, it's going to be the isolation between the computer and the audio system, mm-hmm. Galvanic isolation, so none of the garbage from the switching power supplies and everything in the computer is going to transfer into your system, so that's really, really great. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, coax usually supports up to 24/192, and with coax, I prefer like a BNC connection, a true 75-ohm connection, and that's usually my preference. But if I have, you know, if I'm getting any noise through the system, I'll use something like the Musical Fidelity USB to, it's got Toslink or coax converter. So if you got a noisy system, use Toslink. If you don't, I usually use coax. But and then again, it's different on every system.
Yeah, yeah. You might not know the answer to this. Caffeine Free Dave is asking, what's a good shopping budget in the headphone arena? I should have asked Tile this last week.
Yeah, you know, good shopping budget is the one you can afford, really. I mean, you can get awesome headphones for, you know, not too much money. The ones that I've been using a lot lately are from Edemotic. Like the ER4P.
These are in-ears, right?
Yeah, those are in-ears, and they're great for airplanes because they probably suppress like 24 dB, and, you know, they're not too expensive. I want to say I got them on Amazon for like $250 or something like that. Mm-hmm. I also have a pair of Ultimate Ears, you know, the custom molded to your ears and everything, and, I mean, you really can't beat those, but the price goes up considerably to do that.
Sure.
But good budget. I would just look at, you know, good trusted brands. Look at Grado, look at Sennheiser, and for whatever you want to spend, those guys can usually do a very, very good job.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Well, listen, we've run out of time of a really great show, and I sure appreciate your time. Chris Conacher's website is computeraudiofile.com. So I know there's a ton of great information there about all the things we've talked about today, plus a bunch more. Chris, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
You bet. My online homes are ultimateavmag.com and hometheater.com. You can email me at scott@twit.tv, and you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. Next week is the 4th of July, so we're going to be dark on Monday. However, those of you who are listening this week will be able to tune in for a special edition of Home Theater Geeks this coming Friday, July 1st. I won't have a guest, but instead I will be talking directly to the chat room. So those of you who are in the chat room, all 561 of you at the moment, are welcome to and encouraged to log on this coming Friday at 12:30, an hour earlier than my usual time. I will be answering any question you care to pose about home theater, audio, video, any of that kind of stuff. I'm also planning to give you a little video tour of my own home theater, which is behind me right now, but generally all you see is what you see behind me. This coming Friday, I plan to show you the entire theater, so that could be interesting. And certainly any questions that you have regarding anything that I cover, I will be very happy to talk to you about in the chat room. So, yes, I will talk about my lava lamp and anything else in my studio. So I sure hope you'll join me for that. That's this coming Friday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific, 3:30 Eastern. And we will be dark on Monday, July 4th. So please do join me this coming Friday. And in the meantime, as always, geek out.